Welcome back to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparables podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am Scott McNulty. I am joined, as always, by Mr. Jason Snell. Jason, hello.
Scott, we made it through the wormhole. We made it.
I've been waiting a year, Jason.
Through the wormhole. Oh, no. How many episodes have you made while I was gone? Or just transit or something. Oh, okay. All right. Far from home. We're all far from home now. And season 3, episode 2 of Discovery.
Star Trek Discovery, yes. And this one reunites our crew.
Yes, eventually. Right. Yes. Spoilers for the episode that we're talking about, which, I mean, I think should be obvious. But yes, of course, they are reunited at the end. But we get a whole episode. We got the whole episode with just Michael Burnham last time. And this is our whole episode with the crew of the Discovery minus Michael Burnham until the very last moment when she appears on the screen.
Yes.
Which means, I was thinking about it, I think the only character to be in every episode of Star Trek Discovery is Michael Burnham. And she just got in under the wire with this one.
By the skin of her teeth.
Right, because the first two episodes are not on the Discovery, right?
That's right.
So unless Detmer or somebody who appeared on the Shenzhou is also, and then was on the Discovery. But other than that, I thought it was funny because this episode really starts with references. I thought references to sort of two movies, because there's the scene where they're all waking up is very Star Trek IV-like, where time travel makes you woozy. And then, of course, they crash. And that's Star Trek Generations.
Star Trek Generations, yes. In a very similar, this crash looks better than Star Trek Generations. Star Trek Generations.
Yeah, it shows you how far we've come in the 25 years or whatever since they did that, 30 years since they did that movie.
Although, to be fair to Star Trek Generations, when I was in the movie theater and the Enterprise crashed, I suppose, spoiler alert for Star Trek Generations, I was quite impressed with that whole sequence. So.
Yeah, I like the moment, because I always wonder about those debris fields, because there's lots of rocks and stuff around this planet that they're crashing into at the beginning of this. I always wonder about that, because it's we just happened to graze or whatever. And in this one, they're like, well, our shields are failing, and there's a giant rock that we're going to hit, and they're going to slam right into it, and both Owo and Detmer just shout, brace, 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 and they smash right through it. And I thought, that's what happens when a starship smashes straight into a giant flying rock. And the answer is they just blow it into pieces and continue on. I actually really liked that. And we can say their shields were failing, but they hadn't failed yet or whatever. But because so often you see them in these situations, you're like, there's no way they could have escaped this. But now we've seen, there's even a shot, I think, of some of the rocks hitting the shields, right? Where it's they've got some stuff that's allowing them to survive, but they're in bad shape.
Right. And internal communications are down as well. So one assumes they yelled brace for only the people on the bridge. Everybody else is kind of tossed around.
Just getting flung around and some people die, because we see one person later who's dead. And other people are at least much sicker than Dumbled Stamets, who got impaled in the previous season. But
he's got to get out of there.
I know we're skipping ahead, but I thought it is a touching moment, obviously, because it's Culber taking care of Stamets. And we haven't seen them, obviously, because this is it's like a double premiere, because we haven't seen any of these characters since last season. But the undercurrent that I also really liked, and the way they shoot it, where Stamets is all alone in sickbay with the beeping. And then once he's woken up, suddenly it's completely packed with people and it's a disaster, because it is a disaster and they crash landed. And I just laughed so much at that moment where Culper's like, yeah, there's people sicker than you. We need your bed. And he's like, sicker than me? And he's like, oh, yeah.
You've got some catching up to do.
I thought that was really great, because as a viewer, we're all sitting there going, he has no idea what's going on right now, and it's real bad. And and Culper also knows that it's real bad. And I don't know. It delighted me. Just that moment of, worse than you. Way, way worse than you, dude. We're going to take you over here and let you regenerate your cells for a while. Just stay... Just settle.
That's true. And this episode features a lot of people flying across the bridge.
Yeah.
Which is a Star Trek staple. So I'm happy to see. No, I'm not happy to see the characters get hurt, but I'm happy to see the good old flying around.
Yeah. So in the Ready Room, which is the post show that at least is on CBS All Access with Will Wheaton, which I will say, if those who do not partake out there, that in getting Will Wheaton to do it for Star Trek Picard and then having him pick it up for Discovery, they've really figured out how to do the after show thing, because it's by far the most watchable after show that they have managed for modern, you know, for this new wave of Star Trek. I've enjoyed both of the Discovery episodes, and I enjoyed the Picard episodes too with Will Wheaton. He's a good audience proxy as an actor, but that is who is also a Star Trek fan. And he asked Doug Jones and Mary Wiseman about ship shaking stuff, because he said, you know, that looked really intense on a scale of 1 to 10. How intense was that? And they said something that it's actually true, and I thought it was really funny, is we didn't do quite as much shaking as we usually do because it was all flying over things. It was just, you just roll your body over the console because it was such a bad crash on the planet that they didn't just do the shake the ship thing. They had to like fly across the room. That's and funny. Stuff, which is, it's pretty great.
Yeah. Things are not going well for, our beloved Discovery.
No, I like how they put them at, you know, they're desperate. From the beginning, even though, despite that spectacular crash, like apparently they just need a wrench and some EPS conduits need to be repaired and a small quantity of rubidium, and then they're fine. Then they can just fly away, apparently, other than the parasitic ice. It's my least favorite kind of ice.
Yeah, nobody likes
ice. Ice 9 and parasitic ice.
That, I think they're neck and neck for being.
They may
bad.
Be the same. Do you ever think
that's
of that?
True. Ice Nine is kind of parasitic.
Well, shout out
everybody,
to Kurt Vonnegut.
Read Cat's Cradle.
Read it, people.
Pick it up. Don't read it right now. You're listening to this podcast.
No, but later.
When it's over. Maybe go to your library and get it. Kurt Vonnegut's great.
So they're in bad shape. And I like that, right? Because it's like, hey, we're in the future. And I guess they're people. And that's great. But our ship broke.
We have another moment where they discover, oh, there are people here. So that's nice. A little
moment
it's not
victory.
As touching as when Michael Burnham has her moment of exhilaration because, you know, they have other things to do.
That's the contrast with Burnham last week, right? Is that she just gets to punch the air and it's like, yeah, I won. Now what? And they're like, well, okay, we did all of this stuff, but also our ship is broken. And so we need to work the problem while also discovering about the future. And that's why it's not a replay of last week, which is nice. They also don't meet as nice a person.
No. not a lot of nice people on this film. Well, that's not true. There are more nice people, one assumes, than not nice people. But the not nice people take up more space,
more
mental energy.
They're a problem. They're a problem.
They're problematic. But this episode also, you know, I think we've spent a lot of time talking about Saru and how much we like Saru. He is coming into his own as a commander in this episode, I feel.
So they're playing coy about who's going to be the captain of the Discovery. And I like Burnham. She's the main character of the show, so you'd think she'd be the captain. I'm gonna not only, and I know we both raved about this before, not only do I think Saru is one of the great Star Trek characters of all time, but in this episode, I'm given more evidence to the fact that Saru might be the greatest Star Trek captain, and he's not even a captain yet. And I say this mostly because he is managing the hell out of things in this episode. He's got a bad employee who is Giorgio.
She's a real go-getter, though.
Yeah, he's got a real up-and-comer with some issues where she's in her confidence, who is Tilly. He has to manage multiple disasters at once. He does it with dignity. He does it with decency. He does not lash out when Giorgio misbehaves. I have a little theory, by the way, that he actually assigned Giorgio the most boring job possible, knowing she wouldn't do it. Just a theory. I think he's that good.
I think he is.
This is a tour de force for Saru, and like, make him the captain. Like, Burnham is great, but Saru is, could there ever be a more competent captain of a starship? Like, this is Picard level stuff where he's like so good with people, and he has like spines that he fires from his neck if you make him angry. So it's awesome. Anyway, it's a great Saru episode. Great Saru episode.
It is a great Saru episode. And I think that I agree with you. I would argue that Michael Burnham as a character is far more interesting when she is not captain. And Saru is far more interesting when he is captain. Mm. So I don't think Michael Burnham should be captain, even though she would be a fine captain. I enjoy her as a character.
Sure.
But she's got other things to do.
Not as a little Star Trek aside, I would argue that one of the things that has not been done enough is the idea that the first officer is more interesting, mm-hmm. and yet the captain is the lead of the show. Like, Spock is more interesting than Kirk and was the breakout character, but Kirk is the star of the show. Picard mm-hmm. is the star of the show, and Riker, you know, Riker has his issues, but like Riker does stuff.
He does.
And you could say like Kira is very interesting, and so is Sisko, but Kira is very interesting. I have nothing to say about Chakotay, but what I'm saying is, and then there's Enterprise, but like what I'm saying is, it is the role of first officer could potentially be much more dramatic and interesting than the role of captain. And when Star Trek tries to give the captain things to do, it's oftentimes a scenario where you're like, why is the captain doing this?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so with Discovery, I feel like they are missing, if they go a different way, they're missing a real opportunity to say Saru is really interesting as the captain and Burnham is really interesting as not the captain, but like the first officer or science officer, you know, and she is the lead character. She does take the lead. She does have the emotional arc. She does have the mm-hmm. the kind of the ethics and the belief system and all of that. And then Saru is this decent person who is managing the ship. Like, I actually think that might be a better way of structuring a Star Trek show. So I hope that's what happens here, because Saru is great. Right. Burnham is a great lead character. She is very clearly the main character of the show. And yet I think Saru is the one who is obviously the one who should be the captain.
And the people who play both Saru and Burnham are so good that, everyone on here is good.
Doug Jones, who has been acting in like weird costumes his whole career, mm-hmm. to bring the level of humanity and empathy and decency while covered in stuff, right? Like Saru is this wacky alien and yet so human, essentially, so mm-hmm. empathetic and decent and kind and smart and it's an amazing performance. I know I've raved about it before, but like the fact that he's doing this, it's like what they said about Ginger Rogers, right? Doing everything Fred Astaire did, but backward and in heels. I feel like mm-hmm. that about Doug Jones too, because he's also in heels and covered in prosthetics, and yet has this performance that it just exudes goodness and decency.
And he could be a character that, you know, he's wearing a rubber mask and all kinds of it could be ridiculous, right? And he makes it not ridiculous, and that's faint praise, because he makes it great. So and I think that this is also exploring that whole, you know, people kind of got down on the first two seasons, I should say, of Discovery, because they felt that it wasn't offering hope and that you know, it was a little darker, and perhaps that's not what they're looking for when they're watching Star Trek. And I feel like, I don't know if season 3 is in response to that, but it's certainly putting hope as a central theme. And now our ship that has become unstuck in time, to continue with our Vonnegut references, has arrived in a world where the Federation is kind of this myth, right? Yeah. Maybe not a myth, but kind of this vague memory, and it's a rough and tumble universe, and you know, you don't, the ideals of the Federation are fine and good on paper, but you know, nobody has time for it. And now we see in this episode in particular, Saru is, you know, says we have to stick to our ideals and our principles no matter what the situation is. Otherwise, what's the point of having them?
Right. Exactly. They come into this world and there's an opportunity to do sort of horrific violence. And his whole point is, we're nothing if we're not sticking up for our principles. I feel like Discovery's always been about this. And I think in some ways it is a show that has always been about what the ideals of the Federation were. But I think a lot of the criticism people had early on, especially in season 1, was their feeling like, was sort of like, hey, these people aren't ideal. So it's not Star Trek. And the answer was, the whole point was that they were placed in situations where they had to work hard to uphold Federation ideals against a world that was sort of not living up to their ideals. But this season is much more, I feel like, very clearly and easily you know, we're here in this new place and we need to be what Starfleet represents and what the Federation represents.
We need to bring it back.
Yeah.
And help people. And that's what this episode is all about, right? So they crash land. We spent a lot of time kind of talking about things. So they crash land on this planet. Ship is broken. There are people who live far, not far away, but, you know, there's parasitic ice, so everything's far
right.
away.
Right. Weird, weird planet where there's like floating rocks and there's like weird pockets of atmosphere and all that, which is, I liked that they didn't explain it too much. It's like, yeah, it's weird. We don't know why. Whatever. Let's just go. Not talk about it. Yeah.
That's right. And Saru says at the beginning, like, no, we have to, I know everyone is very eager to go out and explore this planet because that's what we do. But we have to fix stuff in here first before we go out because, you know, we have a mission and we need to find Michael Burnham. And then through, you know, a series of events, it becomes clear that they need to go to the settlement to get some stuff.
Right.
And this is when Saru, once again showing his captain material, chooses to take Tilly with him.
Right.
Because Tilly's having a rough time of it. And that's another thing I really liked about this. A lot of the characters in this episode in particular are shaken up. They're not at their best. They have come through a traumatic, like they
sacrificed
control.
They made in a very short period of time the decision to, and this is like, I forget what, like 2/3 of the crew or whatever, if you do the count, because it's 700 and whatever. They decided in a very short amount of time to basically leave their lives behind and everybody they knew. And so how would that not be traumatic? And Detmer has this thing going on that I said, it looks like from a science fictional perspective, like, did she get zapped by control or something? Is there something going on there? And I had several people say, I think it's just post-traumatic stress. And I'm like, I hope it is. I hope that we actually see the impact of the decision that they made and how difficult it is. And it's not just a science fictional who's it, but it's actually like, no, they're all struggling with the shock of what they've just done. And everything, and we see it in Tilly.
Exactly. Everyone they know, everything they know is gone.
It's gone.
And they don't know what is going on. Like, dilithium doesn't work anymore. Well, I guess their dilithium works.
Well, but they scan for dilithium and they don't find any, which sets up a great moment later. Because Tilly has a real journey in this one episode, right, where she's freaking out. And Saru does that super management technique of like, I want you to come with me. And he's got good reasons because she's super smart and also vulnerable in a way that, like, I think he's thinking she's going to be a good... It's she's a good person to take with me because, like, people will like her. And I think that's true.
She makes
a
good impression.
And she's super smart and is going to be able... And then what ends up happening is she, in that moment in the saloon, which we'll get to, but, like, in that moment... She puts it together, right? We've seen episode one. She hasn't seen episode one. She figures out they don't have dilithium because something happened. And she's like, hey, we got dilithium. We could trade with you. And it's so great because it's a moment where she's taking a logical leap that we understand what the premise of the burn is and all that. But she doesn't understand that. She's figured it out based on her scans. I love that they have warp ships, but no dilithium. I love that.
Yep.
So, so smart. And then also, I mentioned earlier the management problem, like the fact that Giorgio is like, you know, let me at him, basically, because she lives, as she says, I like hopping from universe to universe and just making trouble. That's basically what she wants to do. And
her core competency
seems right. Seems about right. I want to kick people and punch people. And she's concerned about Burnham, right? Because Burnham is like her daughter figure. And so anything that isn't directly like, let's find Burnham, even though Saru is like, no, we need to do this so we can find Burnham, that puts them at odds. And she's trying to order people around because she was an emperor, whatever. and so all that is happening there. It's kind of a mess. And I love how Saru is trying to balance it all. And then, you know, I guess the counter argument would be then he leaves.
Well, that is the problem.
But he does. But... He tells everybody to do their jobs. And then he and Tilly go off to into the ice, onto the glacier in Iceland where they shot it and try to find help.
And once again, it looks very nice. And they find their way. They see someone walking along. They follow him. They end up in a saloon, which is a bit ridiculous.
Oh, man.
But it is Star Trek. So,
the swinging doors. Swinging doors, and later, the bad guy has spurs.
I actually laughed out loud.
I love
those
it.
Spurs.
I love it so much. And this is, I think, maybe when we have debates about what is Star Trek and what is not, that people have an idea of Star Trek that is not what I think Star Trek is. Because I look at the space saloon and the bad guy with spurs. And I think this is the most Star Trek thing ever. And maybe it's because of the growing up on the original series, but like they got there's Jeffrey's tubes. This episode, there's Jeffrey's tubes and power conduits and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There's a fight in a space saloon with a guy with spurs. Like
there's fisticuffs. Yeah.
I just what I said in our little Slack group was, this is the Star Trekiest Star Trek episode in a very long time. It's just like, this to me, the guy, why does he have spurs? Because it's a space western, man. That's why he has spurs.
He's a space cowboy.
Because he's a bad guy. He might as well have the black hat on. He's just, what it is. It's Star Trek, man.
I was expecting, because they know what they're doing, obviously. And so they pan the camera up. They started his boots and they pan up, and I was expecting him to be wearing a cowboy hat, but he was not. So I guess that was too much. I'm sure there was discussion about whether or not to give him a hat. They did not.
No.
Was that the right decision? I don't know.
I don't know. Would it have been too far? Well, I would have liked to see.
That's right. I'm willing to take that chance.
But I mean, it's not like they talk like cowboys and stuff, but it is a bar with the swinging doors and he does have spurs. But that to me, also, that wild mixing of genres and stuff. And again, I think original series is the best example of this. Like, I feel like that is a perfectly reasonable thing for Star Trek. Because the original series had planets they went to that had, like, every... because they were shooting on the Paramount or on the... I think it was the Paramount backlot or the Desilu, Desilu backlot at that time. They were shooting on all of these studio backlots. And so they'd be like, sure, gangster planet, sure, Earth planet, sure, Roman planet. Like every original series episode was practically like that. And so to see it in Discovery, I just think, yeah, why not? This is fun. They're on a planet with floating rocks, and then there's a saloon. Great.
That's right.
With like weird alien guys who are very sad. And one of them gets killed, and it's very sad.
That is sad.
And it turns out that there's a courier who is exploiting them, and courier. The courier is back to our friend from last time, right? It's like Book is a courier, or he's an anti-courier. But these couriers are not great, and they go from place to place, and they sometimes like keep whole planets under their thumb, which is apparently what's happening here. It's totally a Western, right? It's totally like there's the bad sheriff or outlaw or whatever who comes into town from time to time. It's that's what this is, and Discovery's just kind of, you know, crashed right into it. So that's our plot for this episode. It's great.
And I like that this guy, Zahar, is that how they say his name? Zahir? Something like that.
Zara is what they say. Zara.
He is smart. I enjoy a smart bad guy.
Right?
He knows that the Discovery's there. He's figured out a whole – he knows they're time travelers. He knows a lot of stuff.
That dialogue exchange where he's like, well, you know – when you showed up, there was also the whatever it is, the gamma radiation and the
gravity waves.
And the gravitational waves, which is also fun because that's like a relatively recent scientific discovery that they've lifted and put in there. But he's like, gamma radiation and gravitational waves. And he doesn't say it and until he's like, oh boy. Right. And like, because he is smart, he knows that they time traveled and he's put it together. Like, they got a intact Federation spaceship and dilithium.
Not in their database.
They're not in the database. They got old tech. And this thing, like, he knows he is a bad guy, but he is not a dummy. I love it. I agree.
No. Yeah. And so he basically knows what's up. And Saru is like, well, maybe we can negotiate here. Yeah. I have dilithium. You know, I have dilithium.
Because the guy is like, look, you're going to give it to me. He's basically robbing him. And Saru is like, yeah, that's not going to work for me. let's talk about it, which is the first hint that, because Saru knows this too, right? Like, that this guy, it seems like he has all the cards. He does not have all the cards. And then Georgiou says it outright, right? She says, there's always a bigger fish, essentially, right? When she shows up, it's very much like, he hasn't told you that, like, because the whole idea here is that there's still a starship with 80 people on it. Or whatever it is, 800 people on it. I don't know. It's a lot of 80 people instead out of 150 or whatever. And so it's going to be costly for them to attack it. And there's only like four guys or whatever that they've got. So they don't really have the upper hand, even though they've got the guns on Saru and Tilly. And I like that whole thing because, like, it's very clear, like, it is a negotiation. Holding the gun is part of the negotiation, but it's not like I can dictate terms. And it gets, right. And then they do negotiate. And then, you know, Giorgio shows up and
she has a different mode of negotiation.
She's a different kind of negotiator. I think that's fair to say.
It's true. And so when Giorgio shows up, you know that you're in a saloon, bad guys are pointing guns, there's going to be a fight.
And there is. And if you're going to have Michelle Yeoh on your show, you got to let her have an opportunity to kick, punch, and shoot things. And she does.
Check, check, check.
Yeah.
She kicks and punches and shoots a bunch.
In fact, they go to the trouble of, and it's a very great moment because she gets shot multiple times. But yes. But as somebody I saw on Twitter pointed out, she's from a universe with the Agonizer. So fine.
It's foreplay.
It's like a back rub. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she looks at Saru, and there's that moment of like, yeah, we're gonna take them out.
Yeah,
now.
They have that little yep.
And the next moment is he turns to Tilly and says, "Get behind the bar."
And I saw some people saying, "Well, why is Tilly going behind the bar?" And it is because A, Tilly's not at her best.
No.
B, when Tilly is at her best, fisticuffs is not her core competency.
No.
So I think you want her behind the bar for her own safety. And I don't even think she had a phaser or anything. So she's just hanging out back there. And plus, let's not forget, as we see very quickly, Saru, he's not a punchy kind of guy, but he's incredibly strong. So,
yeah, what we saw in that episode where they were in the planet with the red leaves and all, right, where he kind of went insane momentarily, like, Kelpians are super fast, and now that he's not a fear motivated Kelpian, he's got the shooty spines on top of that. Like, Saru is physically extremely formidable, and then there's Giorgio, who is a monster of kung fu because it's Michelle Yeoh and she's going to kick and punch and shoot people all at once. And and then Tilly, it's like Tilly, it's not for
Tilly's
you. You are good at stuff. This just be safe. We got it. We don't need all three of our people. We could take these guys out with two of our people. It's fine.
and to be honest, Giorgio does most of it, but Saru helps out.
Yeah, he was there if he was needed. He isn't really needed because
that's right. Well, this is further proof of how great a captain he is. He's not going to interfere when he's not needed. He's going to let his crew do what they do best.
Yeah, exactly.
And so everybody gets either knocked out or killed. Most of them, I think, are killed because there are many neck snappings. And the Zaheer stands alone. Of course, Giorgio wants to kill him because he's not, he's not a nice guy. And no one's going to mourn his death. But Saru stops her from doing that because, of course, he does. And there's a really good scene where she is holding a gun at Saru. And Saru basically says, stand down, give me your weapon. And she doesn't want to, and there's a little tense standoff, and then she does.
Yeah, it's good. They end up like saying just go out on the ice, and he's like, oh, but well, it'll kill me. Like,
they let the barkeep decide.
That's true.
Who lives on the colony? What to do with him?
Right.
And there was a moment.
It would be awkward when he just like shoots him. He's like, well, we won't shoot you, but our guy is going to shoot you, so it's not going to be on us. It's going to be on our guy here. But he's like, nah, just get out. He's like, oh, but the ice, parasitic ice. And he's like, oh.
Yeah, well,
he should have thought about that.
Here, take Tilly's backpack.
A thing that Zara says at one point, though, is he does refer to Saru as a Vedresh captain. This is a reference to that short trek where the Discovery has been hanging around for 1,000 years, and the guy comes and makes in his like escape pod, and the Discovery's computer, who is now sentient, saves him, and they dance and they watch Fred Astaire movie. Mm-hmm. Actually, to bring that back around, and he refers to the Vedresh, which is very clearly a corrupted federation, but we get that in straight up Discovery here, that's in the pidgin language that is spoken, the Vedresh.
All good captains know.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
And the aliens apparently are from Enterprise.
Yeah, okay. I didn't remember that, but they it's got to be a reference, right? Like, isn't it? All right. Something I didn't mention that I wanted to throw out there is that we do get, I feel like, the explanation, because they want Michelle Yeoh to be on the show, that so they brought Giorgio with them. And there's that conversation of like, because theoretically she's Captain Giorgio, but they refer to her as Commander. And it's like, I feel like that's just kind of a fraud in order to have her not be in charge, right? Because if she was really a captain, she'd be in charge, she'd and there be wouldn't charge, be a yeah. question of the other two. But they've demoted her to commander as a part of her fakery to sex. Also, they know that she's not the real Giorgio, so now what does it matter? But anyway, she says in dialogue, like, I wouldn't want to be in charge. Bureaucracy is where fun goes to die. And not only did that make me laugh in terms of the dialogue, but I think that's a little bit of a window onto this character, which is she killed a bunch of people and did a bunch of devious things to become the emperor of the Terran Empire. And I think maybe she was real bored. And when she got saved by Burnham in season one and taken to the Prime Universe, I think she decided that she wasn't going to make that mistake again, and she just wants to have a good time. And I kind of am on board with that. Like, she cares about Michael Burnham, and she wants to have a good time and not get stuck sort of like on the Emperor's ship again. So that it was a good line to just explain why she's not actually trying to take over the ship over Saru, because it's not her priority and she doesn't want to really be in charge of anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think. And then this is... Now we've got our people need to get back to the Discovery, right? And we think, oh no, they have to go through this parasitic.
Oh man!
But we forget, of course, that we're in the future and personal transporters.
Yeah, one of the alien guys is like, oh, we got a personal transporter. Welcome to the future. And it's like, oh, that's so funny that people from the future are going to the further future and having to be told that there's new stuff. And well, and they use the she's like, oh no, we got our transstator, which is a City on the Edge of Forever reference, mm-hmm. but it needs this. Mineral, which is also an original series reference. The mineral is, I think, the little diamondy things. Rubindium is the diamondy thing that Spock uses to make like a laser to break out of a jail cell, I think. Mm-hmm. But it's a TOS reference as well. And but what I like is that then the guy, this poor guy in a saloon who's being beat up by this stupid courier and like he's in really bad shape, but he looks at Tilly's thing and she's like, oh, I can just make you a new one using programmable matter. And he's like, do, 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 do. Here's a replacement part for your part. And Tilly's like, whoa, that's amazing. Cause it's like, again, they're in the future and they didn't mm-hmm. understand that. Also, another little bit in here that I wanted to mention is Zara is smart. He's also super patronizing, and he calls Tilly yes. sweetheart at a bunch of points. It's a really fun villain performance, right? And the yes. part that I really love is that at the end, when they've got the upper hand, she says, sorry, sweetheart, to him. Love it.
As they send him out to die.
So good. So good. Yeah, that was really good. I liked it.
Yes. And I think I am a big fan of Tig Notaro. And,
yeah, we didn't mention that
we
subplot.
Skipped over all of that.
Yeah, which so, is the fixing something in the Discovery, not the Enterprise, the Discovery, and it's mm-hmm. it's Stamets and Reno, so yep. Tig Notaro can yell things and be yes. withering, and it's and, great.
And Reno has lots of great moments. I will say, I think Tig Notaro, my one note to her is that she just needs to practice spewing technobabble because she seems like she's a little uncomfortable with it. But yeah. once she gets past that. She's great. I love the moment when they have poor old Jean cleaning out Leland from the spore chamber, and she's like, you know, this guy or Hazmat here is going to help him. And he says, my name is Jean. And she says immediately, I've already forgotten that.
It's so good. So I was going to say, one of the things that I really enjoyed about this episode is usually you have your climactic finale and that breaks lots of stuff. And then the next season starts and you're like, well, no, it's all clean now. But because they went to the future and there's nobody to clean it in the future, they got to clean it. And so we go to the sport chamber and the glass is shattered and mm-hmm. there is goo all over the floor because
so
whatever is left of Leland from the finale last year is on the floor. And Hazmat, Gene, Ensign Gene Hazmat is scraping it up.
Oh, man. What did Gene do to get that assignment? Oh,
I volunteered to go into the future, I guess. That was really funny. And then the pairing of Reno and Stamets is great because they're both engineers, basically. Mm-hmm. But you end up with this, like, they definitely are leaning into the whole kind of adversarial, it's a Spock-McCoy kind of relationship. And yes. what I've also found is clearly the producers have realized that Stamets is hilarious when he's not quite in his right mind, because we've had him be kind of like high on spores in other episodes, and here he's loopy because of his horrible injuries, and he's in the Jeffries tube and he can't see, and you end up with this great dialogue between him and Jet Reno, Tig Notaro, where she's got horrible back injury. And they're just yelling at each other, and I thought it was really hilarious. Actually, I really did. And then when Culber shows up, he gives her the injection of like, oh God, you know, your back is really bothering you. Here's another injection. She's like, yeah. Also, your husband is in a Jeffrey's tube.
That's right. And he's bleeding.
And he's bleeding, and he doesn't know what's going on. And we need him to save the ship. talk to him. Here's the phone. You take the call.
And he succeeds, and then she says, great job, Bobcat, or something like that. And Culper's like, Bobcat.
Back at you, Bobcat. Yeah, I just made it up. Earlier she says, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm offering moral support.
She's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's that is, they are so, I mean, Tig Notaro, I love her. I think she's hilarious. Mm-hmm. I like her stand-up comedy. I think it's a miracle. Like, she's been a friend of Alex Kurtzman's, I guess, for 20 years. And he was like, would you like to be in Star Trek? She's like, ah, sure, why not? But it just, I love it as, she's kind of an audience proxy, but it's a different kind of audience proxy from the usual kind, I think, on Star Trek, which is the more Wesley Crusher kind of like, oh, this is really cool stuff, everybody. And she's mm-hmm. the other kind, which is the kind of observer commenting on how ridiculous it is. And I love it. I love her and Reno, and I'm so glad that she is still on the show. And I think that pairing with Stamets is pretty good, because he's like, ooh, everybody, have you ever really looked at your hand in the spore chamber? And she's like, this is really stupid. Can you go fix the thing? It's a good combination. It works for me.
I also love Tig Notaro, and I will mention that you should seek out, I don't know the name of it, but she has a web series where she basically, apparently she doesn't watch TV or participate in pop culture in any way, so she doesn't recognize famous people. So she has a show where famous people show up, and she has to try and figure out who they are.
Oh my God, I have not seen that. I have to seek that out.
Yes, it's very funny. And so they get clues and things, so it's great. And just knowing that she doesn't really, like, and she gave interviews where she was like, basically, I don't know anything about Star Trek. I'm just kind of here saying the things they tell me to say. Which just makes it even funnier to me that she's there saying all these things.
Yeah, and she's got a Netflix special, and there's also a documentary that's about her, because she became very famous because she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and the same day she had a stand-up set at the Largo in L.A., and that set was recorded only on audio, and you can actually get that and listen to it. But it is amazing, because it's literally, and her stand-up is very strange and hilarious, but it's mostly storytelling and awkwardness. And then she mixes in that she gets up there, and she's sort of like, well, I got diagnosed with breast cancer. Like, what am I watching? And then she talks about, my mom just died. And you're just like, I can't believe what I'm hearing this person say. And then Tig, the documentary, is sort of about that whole circumstance. But she's really good. She's an incredibly funny and talented, and I would say unique personality too. And so it's amazing that she is on Star Trek. And what I love about it is that, unlike some famous people who show up on Star Trek, Tig Notaro is in a character that was written for her, mm-hmm. and it's written by people who know what she's good at. So that's the best part. It's like, it's all about how can we make Tig Notaro. And I never don't. Also, it's not a joke character. Like, I never feel like Reno doesn't know what she's doing. She's a Dr. McCoy like figure, and like, she's very competent, but also kind of hates you. I love that. It's great. It's the best.
Yes. And I have full confidence that as Tig Notaro says more of this nonsense technobabble, she will get used to it. Because that's what happens when you get onto a Star Trek show.
You know, even with a technobabble, I feel a little bit like she's – like her issues with the technobabble are also Reno's issues of like, these things are stupid, but that's what they are. They're stupid, but that's what they are. It's like, and then it's like McCoy. He's like, they've got this stupid virus that's stupid. Anyway, I'll fix it. Here, have a shot.
Here, have some salad.
Yeah. Well,
So we should, the big reveal at the end, they get, everybody's fine at the end.
Yeah, well, they save the day. They fix the ship. Turns out that every other part of the ship was fixed except for the part where Stamets was, I guess.
I guess so. He just needed to press this, replace one thing, and everything works. So that's great.
Replace that ribbon cable. from your dot matrix printer.
That's right.
And then you clip a little thing on it, and then the ship works.
And then in like 3 minutes, everything's working again. Yep. But you need those 3 minutes because you think, uh-oh, we're home free. Let's start up the thrusters and try and get out of here. And yes, I know that thrusters aren't designed for this. But uh-oh, big ship appears, tractor beam, things look bad. You need more time to get the shields up. What's going to happen? And it turns out, you know, open a channel, and it is not a baddie, but it is Michael Burnham. And she is there, and she has longer hair, and everyone's like, you look a little different. And she says, I've been waiting a year for you. And you know, I'm saying this like very casually, but it is very touching.
Yeah.
And it's like a very nice reunion. Everybody's kind of, you know, you can see they're a little teary-eyed because Michael is fine.
Yeah. But has a different hairstyle because she's been there for a year, which is it's very Doctor Who. I like it. I like that they have a gap between the two of them being there. That's a lot of fun. I at no point did not expect that ship had Michael Burnham on it.
Yes, I was I usually am fooled by these kinds of things, but I was like, oh, Michael Burnham is going to be on that ship.
Yeah, that's going to be Book and Michael Burnham. That's who that is, because that's why we saw them last week. So that's who it is. But still, and it actually makes me wonder, I'm curious about how they're going to handle this, because this is all, right, this is all the prelude. We've gotten little sprinkles of what's up with the Federation and dilithium and all of that, but like, the purpose of the first two episodes is to set our crew in this universe, in this new place in the universe. So I'm really fascinated where they go next week, because I assume that next week we're really going to get the outline of what the story arc for the season is. I mean, we know generally they're probably going to try to bring the Federation back and figure out what caused the burn and make the galaxy whole again or something like that. But that's all sort of left to episode three. Episode one and two are really just about getting your bearings. And now that they're together, they've also got two ships. They've got the Discovery, but they've also got Book's ship.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming the Book hangs out, and that character seems very much like he's going to be with us the whole season.
I think he's going to, yes.
And the cat. There are lots of promotional pictures of the cat. So I think the cat will be with us longer than the dog was on Picard.
Oh, yeah. Very brief. Maybe the cat probably is a better actor.
If the cat reappears one more time, the cat will have beaten out number one on Picard. So I'm curious because, like, as fun as it's been to see them set up the season in these two episodes, I feel like next week is the one where they really have to put their cards down about, like, what is this show for the next 10, 11 weeks? Like, what is this show now that they're here? Now they're here. These two episodes are done. What happens for the rest of this? Do we settle into a rhythm of we've got to go from place to place, piecing things together and reconnecting the galaxy? That seems logical that would be what it is, but I don't know. I don't know. It's interesting that we're two episodes in, and like with season one, actually, it's like, okay, now I guess you could start the show.
Exactly. And I'm hopeful now that I have no evidence to support this in any way. So this is my conspiracy corner. Just fire off the conspiracy phaser.
Pure conspiracy corner now with no idea. Right.
No, this is based in nothing other than my knowledge of Star Trek in that. So dilithium, the burn affected dilithium.
Yes.
Which powers most starships in the Star Trek universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
I say most starships because, famously, the larger Romulan vessels are not powered by dilithium, but by artificial
singularities. Yes.
So I imagine, although we know that, of course, from Picard, that the Romulan Star Empire is in rough shape in Picard's era, like in really rough shape. So I just wonder if the Romulans are going to show up here because they have ships that work, one assumes. Probably not, but I like Romulans. I'm a Romulan super fan, so
yeah, I know.
I'm just hoping that Romulans will appear because their ship should theoretically still work.
So now we are in the conspiracy corner now, and we're going to go in a minute. So if you really don't want to hear sort of speculation or based on rumors and things, you should probably tune out right now. But we don't actually know what's going to happen. There's just sort of wild theories and rumors bandying about the internet. I don't know if the Romulans are the solution to the problem, but I think they're absolutely going to be part of the conversation. I feel like in general, this season about Discovery is going to be a travelogue of places mm-hmm. that are familiar from Star Trek, but we're going to see how they've changed, right? Mm-hmm. So I would be shocked if we don't see Vulcan and Earth and Romulus and the Klingon homeworld and all sorts of other places just because this is, you know, Trill, Bajor. I think all of it's on the table. All of it's on the table.
Now, Jason, do you watch Next on Discovery is the question.
I do.
So we know now that we're in Conspiracy Corner,
yes.
And these are spoilers for the next episode. So I don't. If you don't want to hear,
sometimes people are angry when we mention the previously, yes. Or the next.
So
time.
They're going to Earth, right? Is what we're led.
It sounds like step one is to go to Earth and say what the hell happened to the Federation, and then from mm-hmm. there, presumably they fan out and try to connect the dots and figure out how to put everybody back together. They got their dilithium, they got their spore drive, they got all sorts of stuff that they can do. Also, and again, this isn't confirmed, but the rumor is, I've seen a list of what the episode titles are for the rest of the season, and one of the episode titles is Unification 3.
Oh, yes.
Which would seem to be essentially a reference to the two-part Unification episodes of Next Generation, where the Romulans and the Vulcans came together.
Two-part.
Given that, I would have to think that there perhaps is going to be a visit to something to do with the Vulcans and the Romulans. Perhaps after the Romulan homeworld was destroyed, the Vulcans and the Romulans did unify and put some... I mean, again, it's pure speculation, and that's the beauty of the blue skies of Discovery. Like, they could do whatever they want, and they can tell mm-hmm. whatever story they want because they're building their own canon as they go. So I think that's exciting. I have two things that are conspiracy theories that I hope don't happen, and one of them is what I mentioned earlier, which is Detmer could be infected by some sort of weird techno virus from Control. Please just let her have a human struggle with PTSD. I think that would actually be a really nice thing to have people have to emotionally grapple with the consequences of what they've done rather than it being some sci-fi thing that's going on. And then also somebody pointed out to us actually after last week's show that the burn could be caused somehow by Michael Burnham. And please know, not everything that happens in Star Trek Discovery is, in a shocking twist, actually something that's all about Michael Burnham. I actually kind of don't care about the burn. I'm much more interested in how do you put the galaxy back together than I am what caused the burn, solving that mystery. So we'll see whether they really lean into the mystery or if the mystery is kind of beside the point and it's really about getting the Federation together.
The thing that the burn makes the burn so interesting to me is not what caused it, but it's, and this, I'm just recapping what you said, but the effects that it has, right? Because one of the hallmarks of Star Trek is that they have unlimited energy and they can turn energy into matter. So it's post scarcity because once you have those two things, nobody should really have to worry about anything. You take away unlimited energy from a society that's used to it, plus the kind of propulsion that gets them place to place, and bad things happen. So,
right.
and that is interesting. Well, so we don't need to know that it's, you know, I don't know, Michael Burnham, like,
was going through time and she thought about dilithium and made it go away or whatever it is, or Q made it happen to see what would happen, or it was a Romulan plot or whatever. I kind of don't care. I agree with you. What I'd like to see, and this is completely in my kind of headcanon, is what I'd like this season to be about is not about like the individual societies in places like Earth falling apart, because I think they would still be in a post-scarcity world without dilithium. I think the idea, though, would be that what the dilithium problems have caused is they've disconnected society. They've taken what was, you know, if you consider like if we couldn't do air travel anymore on Earth or anything like that, like
forced to quarantine.
Yeah, you're cutting. I mean, that's the funny thing is that this was all shot before the pandemic, but it actually has these themes. I would love for this show to be about the challenges about reconnecting and seeing how everybody's sort of drifted apart and can we put it back together? Like, mm-hmm. and the individual societies aren't necessarily broken, although maybe some of them are, but they're all disconnected. And how do you get a disconnected galaxy to live with each other again and be connected again? And I think that's I think that's an interesting thing. So I hope that they go that way with it. But I'm excited about the season. I think it's great that they're in that unexplored, you know, not having to worry about honoring the canon territory now.
That's right. That's what makes it so exciting.
Yeah.
So hooray for that.
Hooray.